Blog Talk Radio.
This is G for Yourself. Now, here's Gio.
Hi, and welcome to G for Yourself. Always great to have you here with us wherever you happen to be in the world. Our guest today intends to help women be fearless creators of their own sacred work by being an activist for what she calls the wild woman within all of us. Danielle Dulski is a yoga practitioner, author, and a witch. Danielle blends alchemy, movement, and sisterhood to reclaim the power of women's spirituality. Danielle Dulski is the author of Woman Most Wild, Three Keys to Liberating the Witch Within. Danielle, I want to assume, or at least hope, that we've come a long way since the time of the Salem witch trials. Define what it means to be a witch today.
Yeah, so it means different things to different people, but for me, a witch is anybody that meets both of two conditions, and the first one is that they practice witchcraft. So witchcraft meaning usually spell work, ritual, but again, that's something that means different things to different people, but normally it's just how you're kind of weaving the natural seasonal and then also lunar rhythms into your everyday life. So witchcraft is very versatile, and so it kind of meets you where you are. However, you can practice witchcraft, and I have a number of friends that practice witchcraft probably more often than I do, and not call yourself a witch. So a witch is somebody that has claimed the name witch for themselves, really identifies with the name witch, and then also practices witchcraft. Mm-hmm. So it isn't necessarily that just because you practice witchcraft, you're a witch, because that would be something somebody else was calling you. And really, it's an empowering kind of it's an empowering name that is kind of a gift to be able to call yourself that. So it isn't a name that's given to you by any external authority. It's one that you've claimed as your own.
Mm-hmm. And I guess the craft part of witchcraft is what has historically gotten so many women into trouble. What kind of actual work, what kind of procedures, what kinds of practices are we talking about when we say the craft of witchcraft?
Yeah, so it's a good question. It's a heavy question because I think any witch would give a different answer. but for me, it usually includes spell work. So a spell isn't usually the group of 13 women or the coven kind of in the woods and drinking blood or whatever. It isn't all of those stereotypes. All a spell really is the process of having an intention, so kind of a laser-focused intention on whatever the focus of the spell is. So that might be anything from manifesting, calling something into your reality, whether it's abundance, more money, the house that you want, or your healing for the global community, something like that. So something you're trying to manifest, not necessarily just for you personally, but for your world. Or it could be something that you're banishing, something that you're trying to protect yourself from or rid from your world. So whatever that laser-focused intention is, that's probably the most important piece of the spell. And then the second part is energy raising. So witches raise energy in different ways. They could do it through chanting or movement or writing or some kind of an artwork. So it's having this intention, raising this energy, directing that energy toward the intention in order to affect change in your world and achieve a particular outcome. So spellcraft is... Go ahead.
No, that's okay.
Yeah, so spellcraft is a big part of witchcraft. And then the other piece would be just ritual, so just honoring these different transitions. So today, at the time this is being recorded, it's actually the new moon. So new moons are kind of a big witchy day because they're these kind of great transitions, and witches can tend to be able to feel this energetic shift that happens around the new moon. And then, of course, full moon and dark moon, and then the equinoxes and the solstices. So those are kind of the common days or times that really, not require, ritual, but they're usually the times when a witch would be drawn to having a certain ritual.
I like the fact that so much of this has to do with energy, and you mentioned manifesting. This is universal law in practice in a lot of ways, isn't it? Like the law of, I don't know, law of vibration, law of attraction, whatever. Does it kind of work on that premise?
Yes, it's exactly the same. I mean, it's all about energy. And so, you know, the big obstacle that a lot of women who come to the craft need to dismantle for themselves is the notion that they don't have the right to affect change in their world. So if we're raised in a spiritual tradition or religion that's kind of disempowering to the feminine, then there is this very strong indoctrinated belief that we don't have the right to change our reality, that we don't have the right to move these energies towards our intention. Even if we really believe in that intention with all that we are, there's still that obstacle where, like, deep down inside, do you really believe that you have the right to do it? Because that's the, you know, that's the big piece of any spell is you have to believe in your bones that it can be yours. And if you don't believe that, then, you know, the spell kind of lacks the necessary power.
Yeah. Now, speaking of religion, you were raised in an evangelical Christian home, and your segue into witchcraft seems like quite an about face. Now, it would be a cheap shot to say you must have been driven. You must have been driven to the arms of witchcraft. So, I'll let you describe just how that transition is made. Was that a driver in your decision to move into witchcraft?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I don't know for sure that it was a driver, but I do know that a lot of witches share the same story I do. So it's possible. I mean, there's a lot of kind of collective feminine rage surrounding or within women who were raised in households like I was raised in. So I went to a born-again Christian school, so that was every day, and then there was church twice a week. And it wasn't something that happened, like, for years and years on end because my family would kind of get really into it and then come away from it. But it was something that definitely affected me. And I remember like being in Sunday school and having to color. We had like coloring books of different scenes from the Bible, and I had to color the scene of Jezebel being pushed out of the window.
Oh, no.
And like, it was like this lighthearted kind of activity. And I thought, you know, in my 8-year-old or however old I was head, that, you know, it was so messed up. There were all these little kids coloring like this murder of this woman because she was supposedly evil or whatever. So,
yeah.
There's like this very, there's an undercurrent of righteous rage, I think, to witchcraft, and particularly modern witchcraft. So younger witches tend to, in my experience, have this, need to kind of dismantle all of the beliefs we've been indoctrinated with, and it does feel fierce, and I don't know if it feels we were pushed to the craft from the religion we were raised in, but it was definitely kind of a spiritual starvation. So, you know, being told that God is external and male, it does create this unique kind of hunger that witchcraft definitely satisfies.
Now, there's an element of activism in your work. Do you suggest that when you discuss women who are interested in witchcraft, do you suggest that they move in that direction, or do you just keep it to the witchcraft and let it go at that?
No, I absolutely suggest it. I think that our magic is so much stronger when you link it to something greater than yourself, or when we link it to something greater than ourselves. So, for instance, if I were to want to invoke, you know, say $100, just for the sake of argument, so if I was trying to invoke $100 into my life, and I'm just, you know, casting my circle and carving my little prosperity symbols into my candles and trying to invoke this just for me, it might happen, but it would be such a stronger spell if I could then link that to the values of the greater global community. So, you know, I'm looking for abundance for me, but what does that really mean for the collective? And so I always recommend there's some level of activism to the craft, because our magic is the conversation that we're having with the world. So every time we cast a spell or move through a ritual or whatever our craft is, that is us saying, this is the kind of world I want the children of the future to live in. So when we're kind of being, and I don't want to use the word selfish because it isn't that, but when we're just having our craft be our own solitary practice and we aren't linking it to the greater cosmic web, then we really are missing a huge, huge piece of why we're here and really what the witch's birthright is in the 21st century.
Now, you mentioned casting spells, and I know that puts a lot of people, male and female, back on their heels, and we have these visions of horrible growths on somebody we don't like, or some, you know, turning into a hunchback or something like that. But tell us a little bit more of what is common in the spell work that you do.
Yeah, so, you know, spells usually fall into the categories of manifestation, healing, protection, or banishing, or binding. So like what you're saying, you know, having somebody grow terrible growths or something like that, that really wouldn't fall into any of those categories, because if you just always go back to that idea that any spell you cast is you saying, this is the world I want, then you wouldn't want, you know, to be targeting anyone or, you know, trying to take anybody's power away or anybody's will away, because you wouldn't want anyone to do that to you. So, you know, so different spells that witches cast, it really depends, but very often they're of goodwill. They're not malicious. They are just, you know, everyday men and women trying to claim that they have the right to handcraft their own world. So whether that's by saying, I'm banishing this because it doesn't belong there, or they're saying, I'm manifesting this because this is something that I want, or I'm healing this because this is something that's sick. It's all just about, you know, kind of impassioned desire. And, and it's not usually about harming others.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of men, there are men who are interested in witchcraft and who also want to bring that side of them out. Obviously not as many, but do you meet a lot of those in your work? Are guys curious as to how they can take part in this?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Some men are curious as to how they can take part. I think that when I was a younger witch and I was kind of looking for spiritual mentors, it was mostly men that I could find. And I think that was because men were able to have this kind of fearlessness about being a witch, you know, because it's not that it's more socially acceptable for a man to be a witch over a woman, but they didn't have that kind of collective soul wound that women have, where we really do fear, you know, deep down that we're going to be hunted for this. So it used to be that I think, you know, you would find male witches a lot more easily than you would find female witches, but now I think it's kind of starting to even out, and certainly in my work it's mostly women that I work with, but in the end, gender doesn't have all that much to do with it, because it's really about the feminine. So, you know, the feminine in everybody, the feminine as an aspect of the earth. So you know, gender is kind of, I think, becoming less and less important, and it's more about harvesting the aspects of the feminine that have been historically oppressed.
Our guest on this Chief for Yourself is Danielle Dolsky, author of Woman Most Wild, Three Keys to Liberating the Witch Within. You began actually calling yourself a witch, I think it was in your mid-20s. How did that coming out affect your relationships with family, friends, neighbors, and probably everybody else?
You know, it didn't affect them quite as much as I thought it would have. And at the time, I was living in a very conservative part of Florida. And I was a business owner. I owned a yoga studio. So, you know, it was something that I definitely was afraid of, and I really was looking at it like it was this great kind of warrior woman action. direction that I was taking by no longer hiding it. And I, you know, it wasn't that I was screaming from the rooftops that I was a witch or anything, but I just decided that I wasn't going to actively hide it anymore, and that if anybody was going to ask me about it, that I would be really honest and open. So it didn't you know, come with all of this stigma that I think it would have in my younger years. I mean, certainly in the household I was raised in, it wouldn't have been met with, you know, open arms and pats on the back. But but by the time I was 25, I had had my first son, and my decision to be as authentic as possible was very much because of him, because I really believed that he should be able to grow up and be able to stay whoever he was, be able to be as authentic as possible in whatever spiritual path, or not even spiritual, but whatever path he chose. I wanted him to not have to hide that. And so I didn't want to be a hypocrite and hide this huge part of who I was. So, you know, I think that I was strong enough in my craft and in my belief system at that point that if I was to be met with any resistance, it wasn't going to stop me or affect me as much as it would have had I, you know, come out a few years earlier.
Well, your book offers the three keys. We talk about the three keys to liberating the witch within. Can you give us an overview of those?
Yeah, so the first key is wild rhythm, and wild rhythm is knowing the way the solar and lunar cycles affect you personally. So it isn't about, you know, knowing, you know, these kind of universal norms about what autumn means and what the full moon means and all of that, although I, you know, I do present those in the book, but it's more about how do these affect you personally, like actually take an inventory, like track back into your own experience and your own memories and see how the elements and the lunar cycles and the seasons actually affect you, because then your craft becomes that much more authentic. So if you know that you're intensely creative around the full moon, or you're, you kind of have this wanderlust in autumn or something like that, all of those little pieces can then get woven into your witchcraft, and that way it becomes very, very personally relevant, and it's not just this kind of extra layer that you can just slather onto the rest of your life, and then it's very easily kind of, you know, carved away. So it's all about integration. So wild rhythm, and then the second key is wild ritual. And so that is after you've traced the way these rhythms affect you, it's crafting unique rituals and spells that really mean something to you, and then also learning how to design them on your own so you aren't just repeating what other people have done and spells that have already been written. And then finally, the third key is wild circle, which I think is probably the most important, and it's definitely the most controversial in witch world anyway, because wild circle, it seems like, you know, I'm saying somehow that the circle is superior to solitary practice, and I'm not saying that. So you can be very much a witch and just kind of practice in your living room or in your kitchen and never tell anybody that you are a witch, and you're no less witch than if you're somebody that, you know, does coven work with 13 wild women in the woods. But what happens in the circle is that everyone has the right to speak and be heard, and you kind of put your magic, your spellcraft, alongside these very mundane conversations about the everyday, about everyday things. So you know, work or family or pets or whatever. And then it becomes very much integrated into your everyday life, and it doesn't just seem like it's this kind of mystical thing that you do on full moons or once a year when you come together. So the wild circle is an important piece, and it could be something that you just come to, you know, once a year or once a season or something, and then you come away from and you're a solitary practitioner again, and that's just as meaningful as someone who's only practicing with other people. But it's very much about being able to, you know, have your religious or your spiritual practice validated among other like-minded people.
As we record this, I have to bring up the H word. We're heading toward Halloween, and I'm just wondering, is there anything about this time of the year that really bugs you, something you want to just scream out to people and say, it just isn't like that?
I don't know that there's anything that really gets under my skin anymore about Halloween. I think that I used to kind of get a little bit more upset about it than I do now. The first thing that comes to mind is that I live in a very haunted town. I live in a town where there's a lot of old buildings, and it's kind of like this old steel town. So there are a lot of ghosts around, that anybody that's just so slightly sensitive to those subtle energies can kind of sense. And it isn't something that you tell really, just it's very in your face this time of year. And so what always gets me is that at no other time of year am I asked as frequently, like, oh, I heard this noise, I think my house is haunted, or oh, do you think that ghosts are real because this happened? And it's like, yes, of course they are. And it only happens this time of year because when they say the veil is thinner, it's absolutely true. Like, you know, the spirit world is kind of a little bit more close to us right now. And so, you know, as the kind of local witch, I get asked, you know, questions about ghosts and spirits more often this time of year than I do at any other time of year. And I just want to shake people and say, yes, ghosts are real, and you live in a really haunted town, and you can go back to believing that they don't exist in a few months.
So you don't go around tweaking little girls in witch costumes and say, no, you're doing this all wrong, you know?
I don't. I have a picture of my first Halloween costume when I was four. I was a witch, which is funny because I'm sure that at some point my parents would have decided that was evil, but I guess they hadn't yet. So I do have a picture of myself in like this green mask and hat.
Hey, you're
all... I have a soft spot for all the little girls dressed
up.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a very popular look for Halloween. It's just it's unfortunate it comes from such misinformation. I mean, You're also ordained. Are you performing weddings and such?
I am ordained. That was kind of an accident. I didn't go out and look to, you know, become a minister and perform ceremonies for people. It's just I was getting asked so much to do it. And I do craft rituals a lot. So it's kind of like a natural progression, I think. But yeah, I am an ordained minister, mm-hmm. which I still think is funny.
that's interesting. And you know,
well, it's really easy, right? I mean, you just go online and get a certificate.
And so. You get a certificate. Well, I'm just thinking, we come from the same state, Pennsylvania, and I know my area, yeah. Pennsylvania. I mean, they're just not buying this at all. And I think you have to sneak out of the house in the dead of night. I mean, it just seems that way to me. Although you've said you have a nicer relationship than that, but people are not so welcoming of those things. You know, they're still. There's still resistance. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, it depends. My community here is pretty liberal, and I think that, you know, it depends on where you are. Different places have different energies, and mm-hmm. I think there will always be resistance to witchcraft. There will always be a little bit of resistance to witchcraft because it's a single practitioner in most cases coming forward and saying that they have this power to shape their world. And I think that that is always scary. That will always be scary to people that really want to maintain the status quo and only see what, only believe what they see with their own eyes. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, in the meantime, we just keep going.
What do you want readers to take away from this book?
Yeah, what I hope they take away is, you know, this a little bit of a sense of how there can be magic in the mundane, how it is possible be a witch and still be a mother and, you know, have a job and a relationship even if you want to. So it is possible to be a witch and still be, for all intents and purposes, a normal woman. and that is, that you can be a witch in a way that feels really true to your own soul, and without having to copy what other people have done, without having to be given the name witch by someone else or initiated into any existing tradition. It is possible to completely do it your own way and in your own time, and it's no less real or authentic than it would be for anybody else.
Your website is DanielleDulsky.com. That's D-U-L-S-K-Y. And we can find out more about the book there.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. And the book is Woman Most Wild, Three Keys to Liberating the Witch Within, from Danielle Dulsky. Danielle, thanks for doing the interview and for the book and for the humor and for helping so many of those who are making that inner exploration, as is the case in this new paradigm, as they say, and for giving them so much help. We very much appreciate that. And come back and talk to us again sometime.
Great. Thank you so much, Dan.
We'll connect to Danielle's website with a link that you'll find on the chiefforyourself.com start page. On that start page, you also get an audio player, which will let you play, or if you prefer, download current and past Chief for Yourself episodes. And if you haven't done so yet, put your email address into that box provided on the page and have Genuline's blog posts sent your way for all of the latest show information. That is all for now. Thank you so much for your support, your likes, and your follows, too. They're always appreciated. Be well, and I'll talk to you soon.